Hi, everyone. It's Fat Billy here. Thanks for coming. Listen to our podcast. If you want more podcasts, you can go to patreon.com/spoatlore, where you can give us some money. And I like money, so I can buy snacks.
Gather round, friends, let me tell you a tale of three heroes, noble and bold. A brute, a druid, and a thief who is but 9 years old. You know them by name, you know them by deed. Their quests are famously daring. So here I sit, singing to you an adventure that is worth sharing.
Tuck is the brute, he knows not his home, he loves to sing and fight. Fingers half elf, he shifts his shape and wields a spear with great might.
Billy's a thief, his tiny size does mask the largest heart. Best and brightest they may not be, but their friendship outweighs their smarts. So gather round, friends, and listen close, for the tale's about to start.
Hello, everybody. And
oh, shit.
I saw you losing control of the pause and play function. It was great. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Spout Lore. I'm your game master, Sean O'Hara. Joining me, as always, playing Tacoma Dome the Barbarian, Abdulaziz.
Good morning, everyone.
Okay.
Oh,
why did I think I got to go first?
Sorry, do that again.
All right, playing Tacoma Dome the Barbarian, Abdulaziz.
Hello.
Playing Ving the Half-Elf Druid, Paul Oppers.
Hi, everybody.
And playing Fat Billy the Halfling Thief, Jessica Tai.
Hi, everyone.
Well, I really expected one of you to interrupt one of the other people. That was...
I was doing the comedy math on it, and I was like, I don't think any of it actually leads to a bigger laugh than we already got.
That shows incredible restraint.
Thanks. He's... I jerked off right before.
There it is.
And we're back.
Oh, that's why you were like, I'll get here at 8:30. You guys get here at 9.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, don't, I see.
Don't check the camera in the studio.
Don't look. Sean, there's so many warnings on your phone.
We're getting hella alerts.
I'm just getting movement alert, movement alert, movement alert.
Something's happening stopped. In the corning.
Oh, it started again.
When last we left our heroes, they coursed through the skies like the mighty eagle on the back of Gale, the Thunderbird.
What a crazy way to say that word.
That was fun. It made me think of the word sheagle, too. This
no,
is great.
On the back of the mighty sheagle, Gale. In the fanny pack, Tuck and Billy and the rest of the party relaxed gently, playing a game of Sorry, in which... Billy right. was tricked into confessing all of his sins in exchange for marbles. On the back of Gale, Ving gripped on for dear life as she approached near supersonic speeds and heard tell of how the battle against Thronebreaker, King of the Thunderbirds, was going. The answer? Not great. We then arrived at the island of Hibernia. I thought we were going to have a calm little, we arrive at the beach and we slowly approach the council, showing our deference in preparation for this tense negotiation. But no, Gale came in hot like Robert Downey Jr. She arrived AC/DC playing in the background.
Superhero landing.
Yeah. Right on the stone. The Oval Council approached, demanding to know what Ving was doing here. And he said, get ready for this. And then he dumped all his friends out of a bag on the ground, and his dad, and his old infirm dad. The negotiations began. This is Dathaniel. He was the Ranger King, but at the time of the Geshe's swearing was not. The man that you thought was the Ranger King was in fact a god and not a man at all. So your Geshe was broken the day it was sworn.
So sick. So sick.
Fucking great idea. The one person that seemed the most unhappy to see you was, of course, Stone Eye, King of the Selkies, who still hates Tuck. A lot. Tuck eventually got Stone Eye to back off using the Truthless's new move, Deathless. After being shown the reality of Dathaniel's killing of Ileana, his history with Ileana, and his betrayal by the agents of the Gibbous Man, as well as the true aspect of the Gibbous Man, truly unsettling, even as you guys were describing it, you'll notice I had no part in that. Like a man made of shattered glass and the glass made of eyes with darkness, mist, and threads of light all spreading out from it.
Yeah.
Being shown that and being told by Billy that That is the thing that has led you to this current state, isolated, alone, cut off from your ways, an empty shell of what you used to be. And if you spare Dathaniel and Ving and let us go kill the Gibbous Man, we can put all this right. Grimshay agreed to swear an oath with Billy that if you guys pursued the Gibbous Man, while you pursued the Gibbous Man, they would leave Dathaniel and Ving alone. And Grimshay, in return, got Billy to swear that you would in fact destroy the Gibbous Man and free everyone. Then you went down to the beach and spent some time regaling the people of Hibernia, who were treating you as near legends with tales of your adventures. Billy blessed the exams of a young man named Liam with a marble and became a sort of
seeing stone into.
Yeah. Gave out blessings to all of the people at this party in the form of all of the marbles from his jar before realizing that he wasn't getting those back.
Those are going to become family heirlooms that get passed down.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be mounted in things.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Like on staffs and tools and stuff.
We bought those at a fucking dollar store.
Tuck,
I found them at a bazaar.
What was that store? The store that's like
One coin. Oh, general store.
Oh, yeah. One coin.
We bought them at general.
We bought them at general store. You can always find marbles in general store.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
One coin.
They're impulse by the counter for kids.
Exactly.
And it's always like Billy's like, "Can we get more? I will work harder to be good if you get more."
Yeah.
Tuck told his stories and showed off feats of strength and explained the origins of his magic axe, while Ving told stories of the beasts of the land, using his powers to create fantastical images in the fire and smoke. And the evening ended with a beautiful night's sleep under the pallid gray fog of Hibernia. I forgot.
There's I always forget.
A beach fire at night on Hibernia has got to be the most dismal and depressing thing.
It just adds to the fog. So everyone's just like, "Hey, Dan, where are you? Can't see you."
Oh, you have a fire in the fog. The fire smoke just goes everywhere. Yeah. You can't escape it.
It's just everything smells like smoke now.
So we just kind of passed out by the fire.
Yeah, exactly. You just asphyxiated next to a campfire.
And then we individually crawled back to the tent.
Yeah. And that is where we find our heroes now. Or rather, where we find them is in the fanny pack.
I like to think that we're in the entrance, like where we used to camp out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In the servants' quarters zone. Uh-huh. Yeah. You're
like,
all...
we just didn't make it further.
Yeah.
You didn't want to wake mom and dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But then you are woken by mom and dad, or rather, one of them. I mean, it's Perel. Is Perel mom or dad? Who can say?
Perel's mom.
Yeah. And you get kicked in the side a little bit, Tuck. Hey.
Saverna.
Hey. Whoa, hey. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hands to yourself, buddy. Hands
March,
to yourself.
Oh, no. With June? Come on, fans. Someone do a calendar of the women of Spellar. Please.
Whoa, hey.
Please.
Whoa, I haven't heard that voice in a long time. Please, Tuck, somebody, wake up.
Please. Do a calendar, please. Somebody, please. Somebody do fan art of the women of Spellar.
Oh, no. Are you okay?
Tuck.
What?
Get everybody up. We got to talk.
And I wake up and Perel is wearing like fuzzy slippers and he's holding a skillet, a huge skillet of like eggs. Like, you remember those skillets from Arrested Development that like buckled the table?
Oh, just like a... Like a huge cast iron skillet that's like a tray.
Whoa. I didn't know Perel was so strong.
If you look underneath the pages,
the pages crunched down underneath.
It's shaking.
You just hear shh. It's all the pages ruffled together. Get up.
Okay.
And he turns and goes back into the fanny pack proper.
And then I wake up. I shake Billy awake.
What's going on? Who did it?
I'm like, Billy, Perel made he made a big breakfast.
Oh boy. Where is it?
Where'd it go? He took it into the other room.
Well, hurry up. We don't want to miss out.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go. And then I wake Ving up.
Billy, spit it out.
What? Ving.
What time is it? What's wrong with your voice? Are you okay?
Sorry, I can't remember.
What's wrong with my voice? Am I okay?
Perel made breakfast and Billy is freaking out.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay. Did you check his hands for visible poop?
Oh, no.
And then you hear from, like, the dining area, Perel yelling, "You soap! You soap, Billy!
Wash your hands!
Visible poop! Visible poop!"
Ding, 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 ding.
Billy's already put his hands in.
And I imagine we cut forward to sort of the study, the observatory area of the fanny pack, and it's got the vibe of, like, the first talk at a business conference where people are, like, getting stuff from the buffet table and, like, you know, pouring coffee, getting cereal out of the little, like, twisty gumball machine style thing at a hotel.
There's Perel has, like, opened up a bunch of pages, so, yeah, like, there's other people, yeah, milling about.
Yeah, exactly. There's, like, waiting staff bringing you stuff. There are chairs set out around the lectern, mm-hmm, that was set up when Morris first arrived. And Perel is standing there checking some notes. All right, everybody.
Is it like your birthday or something? Like, what's going on?
Oh, I think that a lot has happened over the last little while, and what we could really use is a restating of the stakes.
Amen, brother.
Okay, everybody get some. Everyone's got some food. Everyone's got something to drink.
Yeah, Tuck has one of those, like, buffet plates that is piled too high with all of the stuff he didn't want. Because, uh-huh, he's like, I'll eat all this stuff and then I'll go back for the thing I do want later.
This is a classic buffet technique. You fill up on the stuff you hate.
Yeah. And then... Does anybody else do that?
I do it.
I for sure save my favorite thing for the end.
Yeah. You'll enjoy it the least.
Yeah, yes. But what do you mean? You eat all the stuff you don't like first?
Yeah,
well, like, even at a buffet.
The less fun stuff. So, like, well, actually, I do have, like, a bit of my favorite. I always make sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I have, like, my salad and the good stuff.
You looked around like, is that okay?
Yeah,
if I
But we're describing, like, Paul and Jessica, you're describing, like, classic buffets. You have some soup, you have some salad, and mm-hmm, then you have a bunch of stuff.
No. I'm saying you eat the, like... Oh, I don't really like chicken parmesan, so I'll take yeah, some of that
first
to get out of the way.
Because I have to eat, you have to eat one of everything.
You have to eat a bit
you
of all
gotta
the
eat
stuff.
One of everything.
What if it surprises you and it's really good, you know? And
I
then
guess.
You're like,
yeah.
Oh, if I hadn't eaten something I didn't like, I wouldn't know.
And also, you don't get the value of the buffet unless you eat one of everything.
Yeah, you have to get so much of the proteins.
To get the value of the buffet, you have to devalue yourself. There's a direct...
You got to make yourself a garbage can.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm starting to think that I'm wrong for only eating the stuff that I like at a buffet.
But what if the stuff you like is undervalued, you know? Like, what if you really like cereal? It's like, no. Cereal's cheap. Like, you got to eat the expensive stuff.
Snow crab that's what legs.
Yes.
I feel like I'm going crazy.
This is the conversation that's happening at the buffet table. As we're telling Morris what our logic is.
No, but I like roast beef, so I just go for the roast beef.
Yeah, but you could have that any time.
Why not throw some prawns on there too?
I don't like prawns.
Yeah, they look like shit, dude.
Doesn't matter. We're not talking about what we like. We're talking about maximizing the buffet.
Okay. And Perel starts banging his fist on the lectern.
Buffets are not about what you like. They're just about how much you eat.
Mm-hmm. It's about how much you can do to yourself.
Yeah.
Buffet is French for self-loathing.
Morris shakes his head like, I've been so blind. I can't believe how wrong I've been. He starts grabbing prawns off the table.
Tuck's plate is truly terrible.
Tuck's plate is just danishes and prawns.
Danishes and prawns.
Billy's so upset. He loves the danishes. He's like, wow, take them all, don't you?
All right, everybody.
Well, here we are at renaming the steaks and eggs.
Yeah. We're here to talk about what's been going on and figure out our plan moving forward. And he reaches down and he picks up a book from underneath the lectern that's like a big atlas. Mm. Like, it's really wide and really, you know, like when you look at an atlas and you're like, that's too big. And he kind of tosses it out in front of him in the air, in front of the chairs. And before it hits the ground, it begins to unfold.
Oh.
And it becomes sort of like a 10x4 table.
Hmm.
And you hear like as pages start folding and form what you would recognize from the scant maps that you've seen as a 3D relief image of the Eastern continent.
Whoa.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank
dinner
you.
And a show.
Thank you so much. I found it on a bookshelf.
Can I spout lore on the world?
What do you mean?
I don't know. I've never seen a map of the whole world.
If you're going to spout lore, it needs to be about a specific thing
it's
that you want to know.
What about Eastern topographical? Continent.
About the Eastern continent?
Yeah, that you opened up on.
Do you want to do that one?
I don't know. It's just the thing that he opened it up to.
Okay. I'm just wondering what you guys are trying to learn from this.
I want
to
know about what the world is.
Hold on. Don't pour them right on the... Oh, my God. I just need to know if you're trying to answer a specific question, because that's what spout lore is for.
No, but I kind of just want you to describe the shape of the world. Can I roll to understand the shape of the world?
Like, you can look with your eyeballs to see the shape of the world.
Like, is there a mountain range that we're looking at?
I mean, it's an entire continent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff. Well, at least, like, the continent as we have seen it. Like, you can see down at the southern, quote-unquote, bottom part of the table, the principalities start below the Great Forest with a mountain range and, like, a bay on either side that sort of become this large diamond shape almost.
Mm-hmm. Where Mudlark is, there's like a little hot dog. There's a little hot dog, a little frog.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just
maybe
always
a
there.
Frog eating a hot dog and he looks up, he's like, whoa. He runs away.
Some of them are semi-sentient.
Oh my God.
So Perel he points like far up the northern coast. He points to a little paper bay and goes, 2 months ago, we were here at the Tower of Adarnac Allwater.
Oh.
Attempting to recover my magic with the help of you, my dear friends. While in that tower, we got my magic back, found my dear lover, Morris Wedge.
Right.
Who bows and goes, hello there. And
okay. No one else is
Billy's
happy.
Billy's clapping for Morris.
Billy's clapping, and then Ving and Tuck are like, don't call him your lover in front of Billy. What are you doing?
Is that not okay?
I don't know. It feels overly sexual.
Oh, you could love somebody with a... I see what conversation is bringing up.
We also discovered a casket made of ice in a pillar above a magically potent source of water containing at the very bottom a piece of Lillian's moon.
Mm-hmm.
That casket was broken from the inside out. Footprints leading out of the tower... Or out of the room, presumably into the tower and into the world.
Spooky. Mm-hmm.
And that was probably Adarnac, right? Mm-hmm. That was in that?
Everybody nods.
We think so.
It would be surprising if it wasn't.
Oh, and when he pointed at the bay, you can see like little billows. Like there's some smoke coming out of
Sheer
City and stuff. I feel like the map is a little bit dynamic.
Yes. Oh, totally. Yeah.
Oh, there's little paper waves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I love that. I think it'd be really cool if the Atlas opened up to like what the world looks like right now, but you can flip back through the years.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. Cool.
Okay, so
that's
actually,
sick.
I forgot I actually like did that. Have a thought about this.
Oh, okay.
Because Morris made this place like 100 years ago, the Atlas might actually kind of be dated.
Oh, I like that too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's
fun.
Which you do notice because above the principalities, it says like the Kingdom of Kinos.
Mm.
And there's no, like you can see the island chain that Hibernia is in. It's not covered by the gray.
Oh.
Like that stuff just hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
The edges of the Great Forest are way more vast.
Exactly. Yeah. The bone fields or whatever don't exist. Like there isn't as many dead parts of the wood.
But the Sea of Graves is there. Like you can see like little pillars like between the continent, the Western and the Eastern continent.
Yes.
Because the Sea of Graves is really old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Sea of Graves is of, mysterious age.
Mm-hmm.
People just are always aware that it existed. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea that he points at the Adarnac Allwater's tower and the papers go like, and like zoom in a little bit on that region.
Cool.
Yeah, as everything reforms.
God, so sick.
Man, he's so good at origami.
Again, the book is doing it. I am not doing this. And then from the tower, we traveled and the pages go following his finger across the tundra.
Is it the kind of thing where it's like forming like a path where we went?
Yeah, you can see like the pages like dog earing to make like footprints as it travels across the land. And there's like little, paper caribou that run by and all that shit.
Aww.
Nice.
From here, we were approached by, quote unquote, Dathaniel, the Ranger King, who tasked his son, Larangarvinga, with taking down the Court of the Wood by manipulating the runes in the heart tree in Heartwood City.
A little Dathaniel shows up and licks his lips. Imperceptibly.
Who's that little paper papa?
Dude, look at your dad. He's right there.
Dude, I'm looking at you, man.
Looking at you, looking at my dad, and I hate it. From there, we travel to Page's shift to the Great Forest, where, meeting with Dathaniel and his Talon, we entered the forest, hijinks ensued, and we destroyed the Heart Tree in Heartwood City.
You see a little Finn, like, looking angry?
A little boy eating shit or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
We also discovered beneath the tree the body of the true Dathaniel, learning that the false Dathaniel was perhaps, or most likely, absolutely was, the Gibbous Man.
There's so much equivocation in that one statement.
I have to make it clear, I was inside the bag for all of this stuff. And then we were betrayed by Wendy, met a fancy elf who has been mortally wounded and disappeared.
A beaver got lost.
A beaver cat got lost and is really mad at us. That's important too.
Thank you.
I like the idea that Perel is still assimilating a lot of the details, so he can't tell what's important.
And we're like reminding him throughout, so we're like, don't forget about the beaver cat.
Yeah. A man is floating around somewhere above this map, attached to a bunch of birds. Let's not forget, guys, as we come to some very important story plots, there's a
little origami birds carrying an elf.
After this was destroyed, we met and fought the Gibbous Man and a bunch of freaky, gross imps. Tuck got some rag from the Gibbous Man that he seems really attached to.
Fuck you, dude.
I'm just saying, you met and fought a god, and you, that was what you got from him.
Yeah, Tuck's really on the rag right now.
From here, we traveled to the island of Hibernia, zooms in on the island chain, where we are now. Having spoke to the Oval Council and completed slash nullified slash transferred the Gesh from Ving to all of us?
Did we actually?
Either way, what we know is that now we have to pursue the Gibbous Man in exchange for Ving and Dathaniel's freedom. Correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Perel steeples his fingers on the lectern and looks at you all, which brings us to today. And the next question, what do we do now?
Can I have some more holiday sauce?
There's unlimited holiday sauce is for everybody.
Thank you.
Dude, he says it's for everybody. There's only one little pot.
Whoa, I don't get any of that. I was saving my favorites for later.
It's actually pretty gross, guys. Don't worry about it.
I was saving my favorites for later. As things, good things are disappearing, Morse puts down his plate and goes, I knew it. I knew there was a flaw in this system.
You know what, Morse? I'm thinking you might be right.
I'm never trusting any of you again when it comes to buffets.
You see Tuck, like, put the roast beef in his backpack.
No fair.
That's the second part of the buffet, Morris. You steal some of it for later.
What?
What do we do now?
We can make more hollandaise, I guess.
Yeah, and we can go back and get our actual favorites.
And then you hear tap, tap, tap. Coming from the hallway.
We look.
Dathaniel has emerged from his room. He's holding on to his blackthorn staff. Looks like in the walk from his room to here, he has become unbelievably exhausted. Mm-hmm. But he looks at all of you. I think I might be able to help. And cut forward a few minutes so we don't have to watch Dathaniel walk all the way to the front. And you're gathered around. He's standing in front of the 3D paper relief of the Eastern Continent. I remembered something. While I was there under the tree, I was vaguely aware of the Gibbous Man's perceptions. And while I can't tell you his whole plan, I can tell you that the war And he points to the principalities as the pages shift and move to focus on the place where all of this adventure started.
Oh.
And he looks at all of you, says, there is a war down there, right?
From what we've heard, yeah. The Princeps of the Firefield's principality started it or something. I think they invaded one. What did my wife say when she stabbed me?
So the Princeps of the Firefields, which I think we actually said are two people. Mm-hmm. It's like brothers.
Yeah.
Have invaded, I think, the High Spear principality. Or they're basically, but like, they're going to war against the other principalities,
mm-hmm.
At least the closest ones. And he, when you say the Princeps of the Firefield principalities, he snaps and points at you, says, yes, the Firefields, the Princeps, the Gibbous Man needs that invasion to succeed. I don't know why, but I do know that if you wanted to stop or slow down the Gibbous Man's plans, finding and stopping the Princeps of the Firefields would be a good place to start.
Whoa.
Did you remember anything else?
A feeling, even.
Can I use Spell Lore on this, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Or Discern Realities,
discern
maybe?
Realities?
Yeah. So 2d6 plus Wisdom.
Can we all discern a reality from...
Yeah, depending on how many questions we get, yeah.
All right.
Does someone else want to do it? I have -1 Wisdom.
-1 Wisdom's pretty bad.
Oh, I'll discern reality.
It makes sense. He's your dad.
Yeah.
You could probably get him to do stuff.
I can read him. I can guilt him into things. 4.
Wow.
I got 5. I shouldn't have said guilt him into things.
Okay. So on a failure, Dathaniel, when you ask him if he remembers anything else, he holds on to his blackthorn and closes his eyes, and it looks like he's really trying to remember something. And then he looks up at all of you, and for just a moment, the eyes, like the light reflects in his eyes, and you see a blue eye and a black eye.
Creepy.
Whoa,
creepy.
Whoa.
And then he shakes his head and he goes, no, I don't.
What was that?
He like moves over to a chair and sits down. I think he saw through me.
He saw us?
Just for a second, I was able to lock him out, but. I think so.
Just now.
Just now. For just a second.
Well, it's okay because we saw him too. So at least we know that he's watching us. He has the ability. I'm making lemonade here, but I... but that's not bad. That's not bad.
We're just trying to calm his dad down now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's totally fine. It's not your fault.
Because he looks like... Dathaniel, if you look at Dathaniel right now, he's like... He's got his head down.
Uh-huh.
He looks furious.
Yes, this Aww. Thing. He's the strongest person. He's never been so weak in his life. Yeah. He's not used to being such a broken man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely stuff he's not saying right now, but he is angry.
His physicality is finally reflecting the shattered man that he's been his whole life.
Mm. Yeah.
And also, like, him being so angry at being vulnerable is, like, such a Dathaniel thing.
Totally.
Yeah. Maybe injecting a little bit of my dad.
All dads.
Oh, yeah.
All dads. Dads
Capital
across the board.
Dads. Yeah.
Capital boomer dads.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And more.
Just the boomers. Not millennial dads.
Yeah, not millennial
no,
dads.
We're all
who go,
fine.
No, I don't want to.
Yeah. Right.
I don't want to emote.
Yeah. Asked a question directly by their therapist and say, no.
Yeah.
No.
Not millennial dads who in counseling calls emotional outlays performative.
Wow. I'm really glad you're in therapy, man.
Thanks.
Stick with it, pal.
And as you're all standing around Dathaniel looking furious, Morris goes, all right. And you all turn and he's shoving roast beef in his mouth. He's got Tuck's bag and he's just eating.
Hey!
Whoa, what are you going to do
get
about
back,
it?
Get, that's my fucking backpack,
oh,
dude.
Whoa, no.
All right, big guy. And he reaches in, takes the roast beef out, hands the bag over.
And then Tuck turns to Ving and he's like, he's playing by the rules of the buffet.
Here he is.
You learn from the best, Tuck.
And he wipes a bunch of roast beef juice off his face.
Forget that roast beef.
There was one other thing that Perry and I realized. His plan, as you have laid it out to us, is to enact a conjunction of the spheres, correct? To have the realms crash into each other?
Yeah.
Destabilize reality for some unknown reason?
Not unknown.
What's the reason?
He wants to become whole again.
Oh.
He wants to get himself right. off of this plane.
Yeah, when Lillian freed herself, she chained him to the material plane. So his, I think his aspect is shattered now. So I think what we figured out was that the only way he could make himself whole is to cause all the realms to merge back into one, and then he can reassimilate.
Right, and that's confirmed, or is that a hypothesis?
hypothesis.
Sean, you tell us.
It's a hypothesis.
Okay.
It's a hypothesis.
That is your best guess, and it's a very good guess. It's an informed hypothesis, but it is not confirmed because the Gibbous Man would not tell you his plan.
Of course.
But Morris, that's why you were stuck in that, in the margins
of reality.
Yeah, the thaumic realm.
That's,
the
yeah.
margins are a good way to put it. I was shoved into the gap between the words of reality.
Yes.
Yes, right. So if his plan hinges on the conjunction of the spheres, in his diminished state, it is very likely he has no control over when that happens.
Oh.
Is it possible that in his attempt to cause more chaos and to disrupt this reality, he might be going after the high spear to disrupt communication across all land?
It's not impossible.
Because the high spear, I don't know if the fans remember this, but can you remind them what the high spear is?
Right. So to remind the listeners, the high spear, which we described, it's the namesake of the High Spear Principality, is a glass shattered sharded wizard tower that hangs above the city of High Spear, and in antiquity, in the Golden Age, was created by a wizard as a method of ensuring everyone within its reach could communicate flawlessly, easily.
Yeah.
Spoken language sounds the same to everybody within the High Spear, the High Spear's field of influence.
Yeah. Ooh. And it's how we, as players, never have to explain why we understand everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. The party went to McCall in season 6 and everyone could talk to everyone else. Even though there are McCall in words and written language, everybody just understands it.
Yeah.
Because his thing is, when you start talking about that he's near High Spear, the war is near High Spear, I was like, this could be part of his plan is that, because that would be very, very, his thing is like to mess with everyone.
Yeah.
He would fuck with everybody.
Yeah, totally. Right. If no one can communicate anymore.
It would really mess everybody up. It would, I mean, for the podcast's sake, it would be really annoying.
if we were all speaking different languages all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Because all three of you would speak a totally different language.
That actually makes a lot of sense because his whole thing has been obscuring knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So what better way to like absolutely shatter the knowledge foundation of the world than to like make it impossible for us to communicate
with
one another.
There's a lot of eggs in that basket. Yeah.
That is really cool though.
Yeah.
Like if the high spear goes down, the three of you could not speak to each other.
We would just have to do like a bunch of what's that game? Charades?
Yeah,
like bees.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do our dance.
Yeah. But we'd have to describe charades in an audio medium.
Maybe. Oh.
Sorry, I just said Jessica try and dance.
Try and? She's dancing, bro.
No.
Do it again. Okay.
That's kind of a dance.
She's dancing like a bee. I think that's what she's trying to do.
Yeah, it's hard to dance pretending I have like 6 legs, my only have 2.
I thought you were pretending to be Billy. It's hard to dance when you're a perfectly round ball.
Yeah.
Oh, this is okay, actually. Here's something that we're running up against is character knowledge versus player knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Do the characters know about the High Spear?
We might not, but
I bet Perel and Morris do.
Yeah. Oh, right. They were around when it was being built. Yeah.
Yes,
or that when it was up. Yeah.
So they would clue into that.
Yeah. He said that the princeps of the Farfields are attempting to invade
High Spear.
He could be going for the High Spear.
What's that?
The High Spear?
Well, yeah, we know it. Like, it's that tower, but who cares?
By the mall.
It's a tower at a mall, dude. Are you worried about the fucking Hot Topic?
The tower was designed by a wizard in the Golden Age to create a field of flawless communication between different people. Did you never think it was weird that everyone on the planet spoke one language?
No.
I have never thought of it ever.
Yeah.
I just assumed everyone was like me.
Yeah. Everyone speaks fairy.
Yeah. Wait, you're speaking fairy?
Yeah. Aren't you?
Wait. Are you?
I'm speaking McCollin right now.
Oh my god.
And then the camera shifts to like a third party perspective where it's incoherent.
Unintelligible.
Yeah. Where Billy's language is just feral growling.
Ving sounds like Nev Campbell. Wait,
Nev Liv Campbell.
Tyler. Ving sounds like Liv Tyler.
Ving sounds like Nev Campbell in Wild Thing.
Yeah. And Tuck is just speaking Arabic.
Yeah, Tuck's just speaking real world Arabic.
Yeah. Earth Arabic.
Yeah, Sharmuta.
Say more.
Yeah. Shawera. I just said the streets.
That's cool. Honestly, I know so little. I know Habibi.
And yeah. I'm in a Shawera, yeah, Habibi.
Oh, so sultry.
And I some hummus.
I know one of those words.
Just say I sell hummus.
No, it's I want hummus.
Yeah, same.
Did a shwayed falafel.
I know another one of those words.
Did you say I want falafel?
Yeah.
Nice, I'm just learning so fast.
Studying Arabic. Jessica's downloading Arabic as
yeah,
we speak.
Just ping. Bing, bing, bing.
Tuck just the whole time. Tuck doesn't even know McCollin. He just is asking for a falafel over and over again.
High Spears translating that into yeah. actual words.
That would be a crazy mind fuck to learn that you have all, like, you and your closest friends have all been speaking different languages.
Oh, yeah.
And it all depends on this, like, pile of glass.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, we gotta get there so fast.
And Perel goes, oh, fuck. Yes, absolutely. If the Gibbous Man wants the Princeps to succeed, quote unquote, he starts doing air quotes in everybody's faces.
The fuck out of here, dude.
Those are wild air quotes.
In their invasion of the High Spear Principality and theoretically the capital of High Spear, because why would you invade a territory without invading the capital? Maybe he's going for the High Spear.
He's disrupting knowledge across the world.
Communication goes down for everybody.
Then we're fucked. We can't do anything. I can't make any dick jokes. What we gotta get out?
What language does Allison speak?
The amount of people that you're gonna be able to hit on is gonna go down wildly.
Oh no.
The amount of people you're gonna be able to successfully hit on will stay the same.
Tuck punches through a wall and he's like, we gotta move now.
Wait. Let's talk about this.
Victor's behind the wall, like Fitz goes right in. That one's close.
And then two wolf eyes in the painting next to you. Wait. Let's talk about this for a sec. So, like, as Morris is talking about how the Gibbous Man is working, he has no control over the movement of the spheres themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If he did, he would have done it already.
Yeah.
So he's like, which means, lost that voice completely.
Oh my god, he's fucking with the tower. All of us are getting weird accents.
So, that means that we're all working on the same timeline, which means that things aren't as hopeless as they might have seemed. If he has no control over the movement of the spheres and he can't force them to collide, because he would have done that long ago if he could, that means that we still have a chance to stop him. What?
Tuck has zoomed the map in on the Penusian Bay. And he's like, looks like a dick and balls.
Oh my god, it does.
Guys, somebody stabbed me.
The Bay of Penus looks like a dick.
There's like a little school of dolphins swimming, and it looks like a little stream of pee.
And then Billy says that, and it's like, yes, Billy, that's pig.
Yeah.
It's nothing else.
And that's, it's funny that we're talking about like the story based on the, like, we can see, Billy, like, you see the halfling lands, you see a little paper Wittershins and Sunwise.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, what's east? We know that Penusia is east, but what's east of Penusia?
The edge of the book.
I thought Penusia was.
Yeah, on the map, we've never gone further east than that.
Can we scroll?
Oh yeah, let's do scroll? It.
I mean,
yeah.
what's over there?
Scroll realities.
All right, Billy's little fingers are moving the.
Roll it.
Roll what?
Oh, I guess spell lore on the map.
Spell
lore.
Okay,
spell lore.
All right. Okay, 2d6 plus intelligence.
Intelligence?
Billy has the highest spell lore out of all of us.
Five.
Okay. Totally failed.
I guess this is like we don't have to roll for everything because you take a point of experience because you failed.
I did.
Hell yeah.
And
I'll
then,
roll.
No. Hold, but so what's
five?
The,
I'll take a point.
No, you won't. You didn't roll anything.
Yeah, he's discerning realities.
I don't know what's going on anymore.
Sorry.
Okay, so what is the failure on this?
Ooh, if you want like a bad thing to happen, what if it's like as we're trying to flip the pages, it's like all these like webby things.
It's
like we see these like strings
stuck together. Too.
Yeah,
that's like kind of cool.
Like things are trying to form, like as they have been forming topographically, and that there's like this web stopping it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's like maybe the gibbous man on that area has already like
created influence.
Oh yeah, or he's locked it down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like I do like that. Where the ethos of Dungeon World is draw maps but leave blanks.
Yeah.
The blanks have been filled in and the map is being crunched down now by the Gibbous Man.
Cool.
Where it's like where we are and the awareness that we have of the world is so limited because he's already like
done so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So sick. That's
like
so sick.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
So Billy starts scrolling like an iPad kid. Yeah. moving the map to the east, to the right hand side of the map, and the land starts to scroll. But as you get like past,
Billy, wipe your hands before you scroll.
Sorry,
this thing is expensive.
Sorry.
As you get past Panugia,
I was wiping them on my mouth.
On my mouth.
His mouth is just, the outside of his mouth is wet all the time.
A lot of maple syrup.
As you start to scroll the map, the pages shift to the east past Panugia. You see a little label that says Tervor, the homeland of Aquaria.
Ooh.
You see lands with names you don't recognize. And as these new lands are becoming clear, the pages start to... What?
Oh, sorry. I just realized that because you said the High Spear affects people within its reach. So as we move further away from the High Spear, we can't recognize
can't
the language that's written on the map.
Cool.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, if the Gibbous Man has already enacted his, like, anti-magic plans in those zones, like, its influence wouldn't hit there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's starting to creep in. So there's, like, the principalities and things around the High Spear. Like, that's the thing is, like, we can't understand each other until we're right under the High Spear. At some point, you know what I mean? Like, the sphere is shrinking.
And it's like, it makes sense because like that guy, what was that guy's name again?
What guy?
From Tervor.
The big guy?
The guy from up north?
Yeah, who worked at the Husky.
Oleg?
Oleg.
Yeah.
Oleg's accent was so thick because he's from a town that's like on the border.
Cool.
Of the
spear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was the field starting to break down.
Yeah.
His accent was becoming harder to understand.
Yes.
That's cool.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. So, we see that the name Tervor, the land that Morris and Perel know Aquaria was born in, the words, which you should be able to easily read, are in like a strange written language that you don't recognize.
So blocky.
And Perel points at it and goes, that's weird. And as you get further to the east, the pages become like blackened and cracked.
And sticky.
And there's like a weird kind of, Icarus, like resin on the pages. And the words become impossible to read.
Morris, your map is broken.
And he goes, what? I
need to update it.
And you see, like, leaking into the edge of the pages, like, whiteout or white ink are, like, fibrous threads that look like spider webs.
This is the Gibbous Man's influence.
So you see that this blackened edge is, like, crawling across the book, across the map of the East.
Mm-hmm.
And Morris, like, pushes everybody out of the way and like puts his hands on the pages and starts moving the map.
Uh-huh.
And you see that there's this like growing field along the edges of this atlas that are blackened and sticky and covered in this white fiber. And he suddenly just puts his hands under the table and the table begins to fold back up and he slams the book shut.
What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
Could he see us through the book?
I don't know. He's a god.
How does this book work?
I don't want to get into it.
Literally, the thing that we would understand the least.
Yeah.
But I think I know what the next step is.
What is it?
And he walks over to the fireplace and he throws it in the fire.
Oh, no.
My
actually.
Game.
There'll be other games, boy.
Okay.
This gibbous man is everywhere. We have to be exceedingly careful from here on out.
Tuck looks at Nathaniel.
And he looks up at you. Just the darkest bags under his eyes.
Aww.
How much of a handle do you have on what's going on in your head?
I hope enough.
Do you think it would be possible to put the ring on my dad and go sit somewhere quietly and then do a communion of whispers with him and see what's going on inside of him?
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Yeah.
Nathaniel, I have an idea. We have these rings that let us see each other's minds and hear things. Would you come with me to a quiet space and give me some time?
And Nathaniel nods and pushes himself up on his staff and follows you to where are you going?
The one of the paper outdoor areas.
Oh yeah, near the baseball diamond or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're up in the stands eating hot dogs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, all of us Gossip Girls.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And Victor is doing that dog excited gallop where they don't like sprint, but they go like rocking back and forth as they run.
Yeah. I stole second, you idiot.
I'm stealing all of these bases and there's nothing you can do about it.
Hey, bring back our bases.
Never. They belong to Victor now.
Oh, look, he's rounding third.
And under a paper tree, Nathaniel lowers himself down and sits cross-legged. But, like, his face looks like it's pained as he moves his legs.
What's the position that you're in? Are you guys, like, staring into each other's eyes or what?
No, we're both sitting on opposite sides of the paper tree with, like, one knee up and one leg straight looking out opposite directions.
Oh.
Okay.
Looks like the Kindle logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we put the rings on, and I want to roll the move that I still have for sure. Okay, good.
Yep.
Communion of Whispers.
And Communion of Whispers is 2d6 plus wisdom.
Plus wisdom.
Plus wisdom.
Spending time in a place. Papa's mind. Great, I got snake eyes.
Wow. Fucking God.
So, you put the ring on Nathaniel's finger.
I do.
And you begin this meditative reverie and you close your eyes and enter this liminal mental space and you see your father standing there, hale and hearty, like he was when you were a kid, in a darkened wood, the shadows kind of flowing between the trees, pooling almost. And you look at your father, and he smiles, but too wide. You look at his eyes, and they don't quite meet yours, and you're not sure where they're looking or if they're eyes at all. And you realize that's not your father.
The gibbous man.
It's nice to see you again.
You're gonna die.
And he kind of smirks at you a little bit. You first. And then you are slammed back to reality. And Nathaniel, like, takes the ring off and throws it into the paper in front of him. I was going to say grass, but there's no grass here. Throws it into the green paper grass in front of him and, like, forces himself up on his staff. He's in my head.
It's not safe for you to be around us.
It's not.
I'm sorry.
I have to go.
Where are you going to go?
I don't know, but it can't be here. And yeah, Nathaniel is storming away. Is it? Does anybody stop him?
I mean, we're watching from above.
Yeah, like, you see.
So we're eating our hot dogs.
You see Nathaniel get up from the tree and start storming, I mean, as much as he can in his weakened state across the field.
Something happened. He's really mad.
You don't have to run. This can be, you don't have to sacrifice yourself again. This is something that we can all do together.
He stops and he doesn't look at you because he's such a moody fuck.
Well, and he's being like, shielding his eyes now.
Yeah, he's not looking and he says, I'm not going to get you killed. And he leaves.
I let him.
Yeah.
When I was a young boy, my father took me into the city
to see the marching band.
I think we can.
I don't know, son, but it'll be soon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. We'll be the Gibbous Man. We'll be the Gibbous Man.
This is big as singing to himself.
And the cat in the cradle.
In the broke shattered moon. and then little fat Billy and Tuck in his wound.
And then you cut to Nathaniel, who's walking through the hallways. And he's like, my boy is just like me.
Right. Okay. What we see is a full musical number montage.
This is amazing.
And Billy and Tuck are like doing like the sidestep. Like,
yeah.
In the stands.
And we see, you know what? Let's just lean into the montage thing. We see Nathaniel go to his room and start packing a bag.
Mm-hmm. Shit. Yeah, we see it because Billy is following with the Gossip Girls.
We're in the walls.
Yeah.
That's the montage, is you guys watching him in the hallway.
He's packing his bag. I always feel like somebody's watching me.
And then you cut to Tuck, and he's like, I'm stuck.
Just pushes a hole through the wall. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. I got
so scared.
I got so freaked out. I'm so sorry.
I wrecked the wall. I was so fucking scared. And I think we can comfortably cut forward to Nathaniel's room, empty of all personal affects, broken and now abandoned physical recovery equipment, and sitting on the bed, Ving, holding something that your father left for you. It's a long strip of leather, about half an inch wide and 2 feet long. Looks like it's supposed to be worn around the wrist, wrapped several times. And you realize that Nathaniel has been like wearing this.
Ving noticed it wrapped around his fingers when he would draw his bow.
Oh, yes.
He would move it to different spots, and he was like, this is his, like, he thought it was like just his warring ranger strap.
Yeah. And on the inside of the band, you see written, as root and soil, I bind myself to you. Bear, wolf, and cub.
Hmm.
And Perel, you hear from a painting on the wall. Oh my God, it's so sad. And then you hear, shh.
You guys can come out here and share this moment with me in person, you know.
You hear thump, 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 thump. And then Morris walks by the open door and goes, oh, hello, Ving.
Oh, hello, Morris and gang.
We didn't see you there. We were busy doing something far away.
What is this I see on your wrist? A gift from a love long lost, perhaps? Or something else?
Of great value.
What could we know of such gifts left behind by ones with lips so full and thighs so thick?
Do you want this?
No. No, it's yours. You keep it. But Tuck did consider taking it.
He's like,
thank you.
Can I wear it at night?
Tuck leans in like in a weird way, and then he goes.
You smell my wristwatch? Oh my
and
God.
And Perel walks forward and puts a hand on Bing's shoulder.
Right.
I'm really.
His dad just left.
I'm really sorry.
For what?
You get reconnected, then it turns out that your father wasn't your father, but the malicious sky god that's trying to kill the whole world. Then you do get to reconnect with your father, and it doesn't really go the way you want it to, and then he goes away.
I didn't really have an idea of how it was going to go. I was hoping for closure, but him leaving and trying to fix things on his own, that makes sense. It feels like some sort of closure, I guess.
I don't know, man. It feels like it's the thing he was trying to do the whole time.
He just has always been sacrifice himself. I think that's what made him such a hard warrior.
I guess some people are, they only really know themselves through the oaths that they keep and the duties that they have.
And Morris and Perel look at Tuck. That was very apt. Are you feeling okay?
And Tuck's like, I don't know. It feels like something's just...
And there we go. There
Inspiring
we go.
Inspiring me to be more.
Yeah, he's back to normal.
Okay, well, we're going to give you some space. And they...
Wait, I want... Yeah, I should have just a reaction.
Wait. I like the idea that Ving says that.
Wait, guys, I need to have... let me just like sum up this moment here. Daddy, he gone.
And everyone nods sagely and starts...
You know what? I didn't expect to feel like this. But I wish him all the best. Let's get out of here. We got places to go.
Where are we going?
You guys never decided.
We never did decide.
So, like, okay. Yeah, so if we went to High Spear, like, I wonder if Perel and Morris would be able to, like...
Oh, like...
do some work to kind of bring back more of the arcane stuff? Like, what? Oh, I want to know.
The High Spear creates like a magical cognitive field that blankets the whole world.
It's almost like a broadcasting.
Yeah, it's like a broadcast tower. Yeah,
it's basically a radio tower.
Yeah, that beams like a translation spell into everyone's head. Mm-hmm. What if they use that infrastructure to try and collapse the pocket dimensions that all the wizards escaped into to cause them to come back in, which might bring magic back into the world?
That's a great idea.
Or if they fail.
Kill everybody.
Every pocket dimension just crunches on the wizards.
Yeah. It's like flipping on the Hydron, the Hydron collider.
Oh, man.
Is that something you... Oh, because you guys don't...
I like that plan. That's a very cool idea.
I like it. I feel like we need it at this stage where it's like the Gibbous Man sounds like he's got people on his side.
Yeah, we need...
Yeah. And it's like, if it's just the three of us, like, we don't really have magic like that.
No, no, absolutely not.
And I feel like we need it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that was the whole, that was your whole plan.
Uh-huh.
Like from when you met Maggie at Wickport, this was what your plan ended up being, was get the wizards back to create a magical field.
Okay. I do like that. I feel like that makes sense narratively for where we might be going.
Mm-hmm.
And then the war on the way, where it's like two birds with one stone. If we fuck up the war and like the princeps plans, like if we just kill the princeps, then
that also works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we can just go to the High Spear and then try and do this magic thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that could be a Perel and Morris thing too, is like, you know,
like they figure
hey guys,
it out.
I bet he's going for the High Spear.
Oh yeah. I think that would be.
I think so.
What we're intuiting as players, they would tell us for sure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
I look at like Morris and Perel. Where do we go now?
Oh, well, I suppose if we're going to pursue this war situation, we should probably know more about the war.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The princeps of the Firefields are attempting to invade...
High Spear.
High Spear.
Yeah.
High Spear. And Perel goes, High Spear. And they look at each other and go, High Spear! And Morris goes, I can't believe we didn't think about this before. If the High Spear is projecting a magical field over the planet, and Perel cuts him off and goes, that might be something that we could use against the Gibbous Man. Oh my God. And they kiss.
Oh my God.
Oh, and they start really going at it. They're so horned up.
Their hips slowly move together.
And Morris pulls his face away from Perel's and goes, you're a genius. And they start kissing. And Perel pulls his face away and goes, you're a genius. And Morris pulls his face away and goes, I know I was talking to myself.
They're like crashing into stuff in the room.
Trying to, with her eyes closed, trying to get out of the room. We'll just be out in the pool.
So the question, Perel says, is we need to find the princeps? Is that our goal? Do we find the princeps?
Well, yeah, I guess... Do we go to like the black glass side of things and try to like destroy it from within, or do we go to the High Spear side of things and try and defend it?
Mm-hmm.
Like that feels like the two paths that we could take.
Yeah.
Is there a clear side that we are on between the two principalities?
Well, the princeps are with the gibbous man, so we're on the opposite side.
Yeah. Mm. That is a good way to think about it. Those are sort of the two. Well, I guess there's three ways to do it. Go to Black Glass and try and like infiltrate the city and try and figure out what's going on, like, or politically.
Or join the war effort, maybe.
Yeah, like be like, oh, we're here to fight.
Yeah.
And then, like, oh, we're mercenaries for hire.
Right. Yeah. Our fee is
four gold coins a day.
You got to undercut the competition.
Yeah, we got to undercut so we can get in. We got
to
get in.
Plus per diem, which is one, brings us up to five.
Yeah, brings us up to five.
All right.
We never have been paid, too. So
we've never gotten a paycheck.
I'm still poor. Looking for dental.
Yeah, and then the other side is going to the High Spear side and being like, hey, we're actually mercenaries for hire.
Yeah,
and we will help you.
And we know what's coming.
Let's drop Perel and Morris off at the tower.
Yes, that makes sense. If they're working on that side.
Yeah, and then we go back to the fire fields.
Yeah.
So you kind of do both things.
Yeah.
Like I think that's a fine way to do, like, drop Morris and Perel off the experts at the magic thing and let them deal with that.
Yeah.
And then we go do the other side and try and sow chaos and discord in the enemy.
And honestly, that's totally our bailiwick.
Yeah, we're so comfortable with this.
I feel like if we showed up and we were like, hey, High Spear, we can defend you, they would put us in jail right away. Yeah. But if we show up on the other side and just try and fuck things up, that's more what we're good at.
Right, that does make sense.
Mm-hmm. And if we learned anything when we were under the tree and also when we beat the shit out of that old lady, is that our skill set is just in creating chaos.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully there's a bunch of animals that are being caged and we can convince them to riot.
And Morris goes, that actually makes perfect sense. So here are the two choices. And he holds his hands out before you. Come with us to the High Spear, a place of great magical ingenuity, and spend days, weeks, maybe months trying to decode the best way to turn this ancient artifact to our benefit. Or
the second one.
It is very the funny.
The second one.
Please, the second one. And that's where we're going to end it for this week.
We'll high five a second hand.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, everybody. My name is Sean O'Hara. I've been your game master. Joining me, as always, playing Tacoma Dome the Barbarian, Abdul Aziz.
So long.
Playing Ving the Half-Elf Druid, Paul Oppers.
Take care.
And playing Fat Billy the Halfling Thief, Jessica Tai.
See you later.
Thank you to Aaron Reed of Vancouver Sunday Service for our intro and outro music. If you would like to hear the music produced by Aaron personally under Aaron Charles Reed, or ACR, you can find him at aaronreed.bandcamp.com. And if you want to hear all the music produced for the show by Aaron and written by Abdul and myself, you can find that at soundcloud.com. And thank you to all of our supporters around the world. Without you, this show would not be possible. So if you want to support the show and gain access to a whole bunch of cool bonus content, check us out at patreon.com/spoutlore or spoutlore.com/moneyplease. And thank you, finally, and most of all, to you for listening. We'll see you next time.
And so ends the tale of adventures three, who tried the best they can. Though dumb and scared and lost they be, for time's abreast in revelry. And though our journey may be lie a conclusion, we will not leave you without a rest. Turn next week to hear some more whilst you commute or do your chores. And for you, I'd gladly spout more.